Hey gang, this is Mike. Some of you may remember that a little over 2 years ago, I was lucky to have a special guest join me on here, cartoonist Barbara Brandon Croft. She's the daughter of Brumzick Brandon Jr., who became a cartoonist in the 1940s and went on to have his own comic strip Luther in 1969, which lasted until his retirement in 1986. Miss Brandon Croft created her own newspaper strip as well, Where I'm Coming From, which ran from 1989 to 2005. The main reason she joined me on the show was that at the time, there was an exhibit going on in New York of their work. I very much enjoyed our discussion, and the exhibit sounded wonderful, but sadly, COVID struck and the museum was forced to close for some time. Fortunately, the exhibit has found a new home and will be reopening at the Billy Island Cartoon Library and Museum in Columbus, Ohio. Yes, the same museum I visited several months ago to see their exhibit on Walt Kelly's Pogo. I'm very happy that this show will be given new life, and it is scheduled to open on May 21st and run through October 23rd. It is entitled Still, Racism in America, A Retrospective in Cartoons. I promised Miss Brandon Croft that if the exhibit reopened, I would mention it on here, so I figured the best thing to do is just replay our discussion. So in a few minutes, I'll be turning the show over to that interview. Please keep in mind that it was originally posted in March 2020, so it's a bit of a time capsule. COVID was new and we didn't quite know what to expect. And we talk a little bit about the museum and that it was originally supposed to run at. But again, keep in mind that the reopening is taking place at the Billy Ireland Museum. So with that, let's go back in time to that discussion. Hello and welcome to the Comics in the Golden Age podcast. This is your host, Michael Lane, and I am very lucky and honored to have a special guest with me today. Here with me is Miss Barbara Brandon Croft, who made history when she became the first nationally syndicated African-American female cartoonist with the premiere of her strip, Where I'm Coming From, which ran until 2005. Miss Brandon Croft is also the daughter of cartoonist Brumzick Brandon Jr., known for the newspaper comic strip Luther, which ran from 1969 to 1986. Luther is known as the first comic strip to feature an African-American character in the lead role, and it became so popular that there were 6 books collecting Luther strips published between 1969 and 1976. Miss Brandon Croft, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Can I fill you in on some little clarifications in there?
Please do, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm often referred to as the first African-American woman to be nationally syndicated, and that's true if you add in the mainstream press. The first black woman to be nationally syndicated was Jackie Orms, and she did a strip in the 30s, well before me, called Torchy Brown, and she did many things and was an incredible artist. My distinction is that I'm in the mainstream press. She was in the Chicago Defender, a black publication. She was in the but she was in the black newspapers that were spread out across the country. So she is really the first one to be syndicated. I'm the first one to be syndicated in the mainstream press.
So you basically crossed over into the mainstream media in a way that, as pioneering as she was at the time, she was limited from being able to do.
Exactly. It wasn't even considered to hear a black woman's voice in the mainstream at her time. And just so you know, my dad was among 3 black cartoonists, so he's one of the pioneer cartoonists for sure. He had a comic strip called Luther, but there was also Maury Turner, who had We Pals, and his characters were an array of races, but certainly he was a black cartoonist, and some of his characters were black. And then there was Ted Shearer, who did Quincy, which was led by a black kid. So I would put my dad in the pioneer cartoonist range, and they all came around the same time in the late 60s to the 70, because dad's strip, Los Angeles Times, picked him up in 1970. He was in a syndicate in New York, Newsday syndicates, before Los Angeles Times picked him up. So, you know, it's hard. And, you know, in my other life, I'm a fact checker in a magazine. So, I always want to point out these kind of little things just to clarify and just make sure we have it right.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's fascinating to hear about them as well.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your father's kind of background. I understand he was born in Washington, D.C. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. He is a Washingtonian. Yeah, and he was born in 1927. So, you know, at that time, Washington, D.C. was segregated. And, you know, well, you could probably say it's still segregated. But
yes.
By law, it was segregated. So he grew up in a community very much like his character's community, a black community, where, you know, what we once called a ghetto, you know, all the same types of folks lived together. So there have been many kinds of ghettos. But, yeah, that's where he grew up.
Did he grow up a fan of newspaper comic strips himself?
He was a fan of, he probably was. I don't want to say for sure. I know he was. My dad was always drawing. That was his thing. And, you know, through his entire life, cartooning was not his only way to express himself. Painting and sculpting and all kinds of things he did. Well, he also wrote columns and, you know, he couldn't get all of the things he had in him out. He was a true artist. But yes, from a very young age, he was definitely a cartoonist, and he was drawing his mom and anything around him. I can remember he told me a story like he was my grandma was ironing something, and he was drawing her, and somehow it just clicked at him, the idea of depth perception, you know, and understanding perspective. And he said, you know, he realized that, you know, the iron would be bigger because it was closer, you know, just the idea of how that was like a light bulb going on. And he's like, Mom, look. And she was like, what? You know, I mean, but he remembers it very well, having that kind of understanding. And he was a kid, you know, so he was drawing all the time. Yeah.
How supportive were his parents when he decided he wanted to turn this into a profession, that this was something he wanted to do for as a living?
I think my grandmother and grandfather supported their kids in whatever they wanted to do. And what my dad did was, you know, he came to New York to go to NYU. He started trying to sell gag comics, cartoons, and, you know, he got, I think, Saturday Review, Saturday Evening Post. That was one of his first, Mademoiselle. He sold, you know, like these little, you know, single panel. And then he was drafted. And then he got married before he went to the Army. And they came back to New York. They ended up moving to New York. All, you know, my dad, my mom, and they by then had two kids. And they came back to New York. And my dad got a job at a animation studio. So he was an animator for a while. But were they supportive? They supported all their kids, and their kids have been pretty incredible. You know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Now, was animation something he wanted to make a career out of, or was it just a job in the meantime?
I think it was a means. You know, he could do it. He was very good at it. He got a job. You know, so he felt like he was drawing. You know, he was still drawing, and it was, you know, this is technical drawing. He was animating, I don't know, missiles and things. You know, it wasn't like he was animating Daffy Duck or anything. But on the side, he was always working on his comics and expressing himself. And he was basically a voice in the civil rights movement. That was his thing, is to be clear and to educate folks.
Now, that might be a good segue. Did he speak to how difficult was it for a black man in the 1940s to break into cartooning, whether it's through gag strips, editorial cartoon, you know, animation, any of it? How hard was that for him at the time?
From what he would tell me, it was that it was very difficult. You know, he would just keep sending things and sending things and sending things and being turned down. I did have a story about him being hired for something to draw something for some company, and when he showed up, they said, this must be the wrong person. He's like, these are my drawings. And they did not want to hire him. So he did run into that kind of nonsense.
I wish I could say I was surprised, but it'd be almost more, sadly more surprising if he had not had that kind of experience, given
exactly.
What things were like.
Yeah.
Now, my understanding is he did the gag strips, editorial cartoons, other things for really about over two decades before Luther finally started. Did he have was creating an ongoing strip like Luther always his goal, or was that something to develop later?
That actually, and I was surprised because he wrote down a lot of his feelings about the beginnings of Luther, and that, he said that was like one of his dreams, is to have a nationally syndicated cartoon. So when that opportunity did present itself, he was thrilled. But yeah, before Luther, he did many, many, and there was a publication, a journal, a literary journal called Freedom Ways, that, you know, was a black journal. I think W.E. Du Bois was one of the founders, and it was an incredible, it's now online, you can find it online, they put all of the issues online, but once a year my dad would, there were, it was a quarterly, so once a year they featured my dad's comics, and they're just incredibly hard-hitting and strong. I was very proud that the African American Museum in Washington, D.C., and I was down there saying, you need to have my dad in here. while I was in there, they had a copy of, they just on display of Freedom Ways. And right at the bottom it says, in cartoons by Brunswick Brandon Jr.
Oh, that's
so here awesome. I was pushing for him to be in there. He's already there.
That's awesome. And you said all these issues, including his cartoons, are available for free online now?
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And what was, if you could just repeat for people who may want to check it out.
Freedom Ways. I'm going to see if I can find the actual name. But Freedom Ways is what to look up, what to Google to find it. And it's a journal.
Now, this is, you probably already made this obvious, so excuse me if it seems redundant, but it sounds like your father was very active in the civil rights movement of the period. Is that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I feel proud that I can say, even though I was three, was I three? Was it that? I might have been five. Wait a minute now. But when the first March on Washington, we drove from New York down to D.C. to be a part of the March on Washington. I mean, that's how dedicated he was and has been and was throughout his whole life. So it's and I always say, yes, I was there, but, you know, they left me at my grandma's house with my brother and sister, because there's a lot of people having kids with you. But, yeah, my dad was always a part of making sure, it was a part of the civil rights movement. That was his thing.
And we should probably mention for our listeners, too, that my understanding is Luther, the strip, was named in honor of Martin Luther King. Is that right?
That is true. That is true, yeah. And my dad used to like to tell the story about, you know, he's sitting around and everybody's saying, well, you know, deciding, you know, everything's a group decision. You know, the editors are like, well, maybe when my dad said he wanted to name it Luther, they're like, Luther, what will the Catholics say? It was like, what? Yeah, he always liked to say that story, but no, it was absolutely Martin Luther King.
Now, can you tell anyone listening who's not familiar with the Luther strip a little bit about it?
Yeah. So it was initially called Luther in the Inner City. Another way that we used to describe, you know, what we call now the ghetto or the, you know, whatever we want to call it. Whatever, mm-hmm. You know, it's a city where the area where black folks live. So it was Luther in the Inner City. And so there were six characters. And, you know, we had two white characters, actually. One was, the little girl was Lily, Lily, and she had a brother.
I'm sad.
I forgot a name.
I'm embarrassed to say it took me a minute for the Lily White to click in my head.
Yeah, and he had a character, Hardcore, who was kind of streetwise, you know. And he had a girl, Mary Frances, which, you know, just took the if you look at her first initials to her name, and she was kind of a hard rock, you know, kind mm-hmm. of a streetwise girl. And he had a character named Oreo, who liked the cookie, was black on the outside, but acted very white and was, you know, feeling superior or embarrassed by her own race, you know, just that kind of character. He looked at the whole range. And then there was a Pee-wee, a little guy, who was part of the group who was just trying to understand Luther. Luther, the character Luther, kind of took the role of keeping the group together and educating them on. He was the wise one of the group.
Now, I'm assuming, kind of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but having a cast made up of children probably allowed him to get away with addressing racial issues and that kind of environment in a way he might not have been able to with another cast.
Absolutely. I mean, that's we've always felt that. I felt, and he has said it in the past, that's how characters, how all the characters that were black were introduced into the mainstream. They were kids, a little, you know, like, so it's a little more palatable to take in what kids are saying, because you don't, you know, people can put kids in their place, in their own minds, and not think it's as jarring or whatever. And that's one of, well, you're not talking about me, but that was one of the things that I was proud to be able to do is have adult characters, because in the 60s and the 70s, that's what was more welcome, were listening to the voices of kids. So, yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention for people is I'd said at the outset how he had had his strips collected in several volumes in the late 60s and through the 70s. So I believe they're out of print, but I wanted to go down real quick and list the titles of those books in case anyone's interested in tracking him down and who hasn't been exposed to his work and wants to see the strip. And I believe the titles are as follows. It starts with Luther from Inner City, Luther Tells It As It Is, Right on Luther, Luther Raps, Out of Sight Luther, and Luther's Got Class. And I love those titles, by the way.
Yeah, those are the books, yeah.
I did a quick check, and while they are out of print, they're not terribly difficult to find on eBay or through other sellers if you're interested. Although a few of them have gone up in price a little, I think, because they're not the most common nowadays.
Yeah.
But it'd be great if at some point these got back into print so people could get exposed to them more.
Yeah, the Medialia Gallery, where we have the exhibit now, they have a little bit of stock in Luther's Got Class, and you can purchase that book, that particular book, there if you go to their website. And that's the one where Shirley Chisholm wrote, he called it a love note, but it's kind of like the foreword to the book, and talking about how pleased she was to be, with what my dad was doing.
You know, that I think I neglected to mention in the outset, and we're going to get to it later, but I did neglect to mention specifically the exhibition, which is one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you. And as you said, it's at the Medialia Gallery, but can you tell people a little bit about the exhibit?
This exhibit, I was really, really, really excited about it, because it's the concept was something that I talked to my dad about, because when my dad was doing his work, And then I came along 30 years later, you know, a different syndicate, a different setup, a different premise. But we covered, not even knowingly, many of the same topics. And a lot of the topics that we covered was the idea of racism in America. So what I was excited about was the idea of, and the way I presented it to my dad was like, don't you think it would be great to do a book of your strips and my strips, and we're talking about how we're talking about the same subjects 30 years apart. I said we could even include, as I like to call them, the not-so-fan letters that we got, you know, because they were, you know, along the same line, too. You know, people having the same kind of anger just because they're having black faces on their newspaper. You know, the kinds of reactions that we would get. So I was like, and he thought, yes, let's do it. And unfortunately, my dad was stricken with Parkinson's disease. And so for, in the last 12 years of his life, it was difficult, you know, for him to do much. And near the end, it was difficult to do almost everything. But he liked the idea. And it wasn't until I was talking with my friend, who was also the curator of the show, Tara Donahue. Her parents own this gallery. It's Medialia Gallery. I know it's a mouthful. Medialia Gallery. And this was the third show. And she's like, why can't we do that as an exhibit? So the exhibit that's going on now, and if it had not been for the unfortunate pandemic that we're experiencing right now, which is frightening all alone, you would still be able to see it at the Medialia Gallery. And it's called Still. And Still, Racism in America, retrospective in cartoons. I trying not to break my arm, patting myself on the back, but it was really a profound collection of my dad's stuff through the years, my stuff through the years, and I even did new stuff that was included. So folks who came to see it were really moved by it, and that was exactly the reaction I wanted to have and see.
Now, as far as when people go there and they see your father's work, it sounds like it's going to cover all areas, the editorial cartoons, gag strips, Luther strips as well. Is it going to be that kind of broad collection?
Yes, absolutely. So my dad did, like we say, for Freedom Ways. He also did Luther, as we've talked about. But he also did strips for a resource called Black Resources, which was a consortium, I can't even say that word ever, of black newspapers. So for Black Resources, Freedom Ways, Los Angeles Times Syndicate, which is what Luther was running under, and he also did comic strips for Florida Today. So we took things from everywhere. You know, my dad, and it was so difficult to try to edit down what we should use. We needed a whole, you know, stadium to put up. My dad was prolific, but we did a whole, you know, this is an intimate gallery, but we packed the walls with strips from all sources where both my dad and I worked, and put it together in such a way, because what we were wondering about is, should we do it chronologically? Of course, I would start with my dad and end with me, but we thought it was more impactful if we did a long theme. Mm-hmm. So we did. You know, there's police brutality, there's urban renewal, you know, there's voting suppression, there's, you name it, we just tried to, and of course some of them overlap, and so, but it was really thoughtfully put together, and I feel made a really profound expression of what it feels like to experience racism through the years, and still, which is, of course, the name of the show.
I have to admit, personally, I'm very disappointed because my family was actually going to be in New York in a few weeks in my children's spring break, and that was on my list of things to see. I was going to go to the exhibit of you and your father's work, so I'm really disappointed that that's one of the things we've had to scuttle with the outbreak, and I'm disappointed to the degree it prevents other people from seeing it as well. Is there a chance of any extension or any of it being lengthened?
You know, as we know, things change by the hour and the day, in the minute. So we don't know. I do know that it is still up and that the gallery did have to close. I do know that they've had to postpone the next exhibit that was scheduled to be up. So there's a chance that this stays up for a little bit longer. And if things calm down at all in any kind of real way, we've talked about the possibility of special appointments to come in just to see the show. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe one person, two people come up and are able to experience it. And that's actually kind of nice because, you know, you have time to really read everything and come away with what we put together. So, I cross my fingers about that. And it's you know, worthwhile, you know, looking up the gallery, sending them an email or calling them and asking them if there's an opportunity to see it because it is still up.
And if I do hear of it being extended at all, I'll be sure to put out to our followers on social media, because I do have quite a few in New York, so we'll let them know if that opportunity does come up.
That would be great. Thank you.
Now, I wanted to turn attention to you and your career and background for a little bit. And the first question is going to be a little personal and been just of my own interest. What's it like growing up with a cartoonist as a dad?
That's funny. I like to tell this story because it's so true. So my dad did a daily, right? So every 2 weeks he had to produce 2 weeks of Luther. So it seems like, you know, I know now because he had a notebook by his bed, you know, he would keep notes and all that. But the second week, he was drawing and putting it down. And before he built a studio in the basement, he would do his work in the dining room, which was the center of the house. Now, he had three kids, and we were like, you know, wild. You know, I'm going outside, you know, just. But when it was Luther week, it was like we had to be quiet. And I can remember saying, my goodness, this guy's supposed to be a cartoonist. He's no fun. He's no fun. Because he was so serious, and he had to shut everybody down, and everybody had to be quiet, tiptoe around everywhere. So it was kind of wild. But it is also true that by the time I was old enough, I think high school probably, maybe junior high, he gave us all a drawing test, and I seemed to been the one who could handle it the best in his eyes, and I was there, and he hired me.
That's amazing.
He put the Zippitone, that's what it was called at the time, Zippitone. I later used Lectrotone, but the little dots on the face, you know, you cut it out and burnish it, you know. I used to do that, or color in silhouettes, and once when he had a back operation, and he couldn't do the lettering, and I would do the lettering for Luther. So I'm like, I was in training when I was a kid. Didn't even know it. Didn't even realize.
So you were a professional artist assistant on a national strip while you were still in high school.
Yeah. Who knew? I was. Yeah.
Is that when you got the bug, or had you already had kind of artistic leanings before then?
Honestly, I didn't have the cartooning bug until much later. I felt like I wanted to, I didn't know what I wanted to be. I went to Syracuse, I went to the school, you know, VPA, Visual Performing Arts. I had to send in a portfolio. I got accepted, amazingly. Not amazingly, but yeah, for me it was amazingly. But I, even while I was there, I didn't know what I wanted to be. You know, I was like, I think I'll be a fashion designer. I think I'll be, you know, I was all over the place the whole time I was there. So even while I was there, I had no idea I was going to be a cartoonist. And it was after that, I came home, I got a job at a fashion publication writing, and they liked my, I took my portfolio, it's like, I can draw. So they would send me to, you know, if I was covered in particular designer, I'd go to their showroom, I'd sketch their little drawing, you know, the things, I'd report on it. That's what I did. And it wasn't until I went to try to get a job at a magazine, again, I took my portfolio, and I was like, talking to them, I was like, I know, I'll do anything. You know, I could work anywhere. I could work in editorial, I could do this. And this woman, her name is Marie Brown, she was the editor-in-chief of a magazine, a black magazine called Elan, and she said, you're funny. And you can draw. Maybe you can come with a comic strip for us. And that's, I'm telling you the truth, it was 1981. And I was like, huh? And I was like, and I was like, you know what, I think I can do that. But I had, and plus, of course, I just said I had the training to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But I also had seen it done. I had a sure enough, you know, role model in my house. My dad was drawing all the time. Before Luther, he was doing comic strips, you know. And he was like, I didn't mention this, but he was also in New York. He was on a show called Time for Joy. It was a kid's show. He did all the illustrations.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He was Mr. Beebe. But so that's how I got to. So I got the bug much later. And I had this, you know, very kind of, you know, not fair for me to have this kind of attitude. But I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. I can do it. And, you know, and he was very encouraging. He was like, by then he had built a studio in the basement. He's like, go downstairs, come up with an idea, you know.
I was wanting to ask you what his reaction was when he found out about it.
Yeah, he was very excited about it. He was, and prompted me to come up with an idea, and I did come up with the idea. I wanted all women. I wanted what they had to say be most important, and I came up with this idea of talking heads, and the magazine loved it. And they said, we're going to go with it. Can you do more? That's what they said. I did like four. They said, can you do more? You know, because then we can figure out how to paste it in the magazine. And I was like, yes. And I came back. I was like, I've got them done. I call up. And I was like, can I speak to Marie Brown? They're like, no, she's not available right now. I was like, but we have an appointment. She's like, you don't understand. The magazine folded. I was like, what?
Oh, shoot.
So that was that. That was the end of that. And then I tried to get it into Essence, which is another black woman's magazine. And they were like, we're not ready to put a comic strip in the magazine. But what do you do since you're not making it cartoons? And I was like, well, I write fashion. And I got a job there. And it lasted 5.5 years. And then my dad got an award for being one of the pioneer black cartoonists in the Detroit Free Press. And the managing editor there was Marty Clough at the time. Contacted my dad and said, listen, we're trying to put black comic strips in our newspaper. We want our newspaper to reflect the community. And she asked my dad, Marty is a woman, she asked my dad, do you know any black cartoons? And he's like, matter of fact, I do. So that's when he put it to me. He's like, are you going to keep talking about this? Are you going to do it? And I sent her those same samples, and she liked it. And that's how I got going.
Cool. Now, you mentioned this a little bit earlier on in forming the idea, but if you could just describe for people who've never seen it a little bit about your strip, where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So where I'm coming from is a cast of black women, opinionated black women, who are friends. They're all friends. They are not necessarily of the same opinion. And I have them either talking directly to the reader, and my influence there was Jules Feiffer. I just loved how he would have his characters speaking mm-hmm. right to the reader. And so that was my, you know, I was like, I kind of took that idea and worked it with my characters. So once I got going at Detroit, and once I started trying to find a syndicate, the feedback I got, you can't just do heads, you can't just do talking heads. I was like, but that's what I want to do. I'm so sick of how women are thought of in terms of their bodies, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have a Barbie doll, you know, figure that's, you know, unrelatable. I just want people to look in these women's eyes, not their cleavage. You know, I want them to look in their eyes and talk and hear from them, you know, and or eavesdrop on them talking to each other. It was just trying to open at a window so people could say, oh, that's what black people think. I mean, I have since, and I this is one of the biggest compliments I've gotten, heard from people who have said that, you know what, I didn't know any black people, and we had Where I'm Coming From in our paper, and I knew them, I felt like I could relate to them, and it opened my eyes. I was like, well, my job was done. You know, it's like, that was a high, high compliment. But, so the characters, so for Where I'm Coming From, it's different characters talking directly to the reader about things that concern me. So I would go all the way from talking about sexism, talking about racism, or talking about, you know, man, this hair keeps growing out of my chin. You know, people, just plain women's anxiety. Just talking, you know, from myself, because everything was based on my own experience or my friend's experiences or something I may have heard somebody say and think, oh, that's just ridiculous, you know, and I put it down. And in those cases, I could have two of the friends talking and one not agreeing and being like rolling her eyes, hearing one say it. But, you know, it just gave me an opportunity to say, no, all black women don't think one way, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody thinks one way. We're all individuals. And it's particularly important to me when you can make that clear about what is thought of as, this is what black people think. You know, it's like, we think a lot of things. You know, it depends on who's saying it and what they're informed by and why they come up with these opinions. But it was really a special time for me to be able to do that.
That's wonderful. Did you, if people go to the exhibit, what can they expect to see of your work? Is it mostly Where I'm Coming From, or is it moved beyond that to other things as well?
Of what in the exhibit of what we show is all Where I'm Coming From. But what is new is that I did 14 new strips that nobody saw. This is the first place they're being shown. And that is because my syndication ended in 2005. So it's been many years, you know, mm-hmm. in that, you know, I work a full-time job. You know, I was raising a kid. I mean, he's grown now. But, you know, during that time, it's like I could never even have the time. I even gave up my space in the basement for what I used to have my little studio. I just, you know, it got moved into, my husband is a musician, a music studio. So I just didn't take the time to do it. And then one thing happened. We had a new president come aboard that I could not help myself. I was like, okay, now I was back on the board. I mean, and you know, like the very first, when he first got elected, you know, I did a strip. I was at work, and I showed my kid, and he's like, where'd you do that? I was like, in my office. but just the idea, I just felt so compelled to talk about it. And for that one, it's something that you've seen in the press release I sent you. But that is, you know, America put white supremacy on the ballot. Guess what happened? And then I do a little hashtag, Obama backlash. You know, that's what it felt like. That's what I know that particular character would talk about. And mm-hmm. I just did it. So once we started to do this put together this thing for the gallery, this exhibit, Tara was like, you know, it'd be nice if we could have some new stuff. I said, I have a lot written. I haven't, she's like, don't post them anywhere. You know, just do them and we will show them in the exhibit. So it's all Where I'm Coming From, but it's the newer ones too. So I have like 14 new ones that just fit right in with the whole theme of what we're talking about in this exhibit.
That's great. Now, you mentioned earlier some things that were on sale at the exhibit. Do you mind repeating that again?
Yes. So at Medialia Gallery has Dad's book, Luther's Got Class. And they also have a book that my dad, and we have this in the exhibit too. This is exciting. My dad self-published a book called Some of My Best Friends. And this is during the time that he was contributing to Freedom Ways. And so we have reprinted that book. So that book is also available there. But what's so sweet about that is that we also show in the exhibit, at least, a letter that Langston Hughes wrote my dad, talking about how much he loved the book and how please send him six because he wants to make sure the shops get it. I mean, it essentially, that's Langston Hughes writing my dad a fan letter. What? That's so cuckoo. I mean, it's great, but it's just, and we, you know, we share that. And they formed a relationship because they were both contributors to Freedom Ways. And this, some of my best friends is a look at racism in America, and it's not something that ran at Freedom Ways. It's something my dad did independently. Mm-hmm. And so that's also available at Medialia Gallery. And we put together some, what do you call it, postcards of some of the things, some of my strips, some of my dad's things that he did for Freedom Ways that are also available there. If you go to their website, it is, you can check it out.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be wrapping it up in just a few moments, but I did want to say again, I really want to give you a thank you for coming to talk to me. I really appreciated it. And I'm really sorry for the problems that have come up because of the virus and any interference in the exhibit. It's such a shame because it sounds like a wonderful exhibit.
Thank you. Yeah. I feel like I'm grieving a little bit about, you know, the fact that the exhibit has had such a short life, but maybe it's going to live on. I will keep you posted on that front for sure.
You know, now that you've kind of had the chance to go back and do a little more cartooning recently, any plans to revisit it in the future?
Yeah. You know, because I'm kind of old school, I'm like, I'm not that social media savvy. People keep saying, you should do it on Instagram. I was like, okay, what does that exactly mean? But I do. I am entertaining the thought. It's just the thought in my head. I haven't figured out how to exactly do it. But you know, shortly after, I love Universal Press Syndicate, and I really do want to mention Lee Salem. I'm so sorry that he passed away last year, and he was such a champion of mine. He was the editorial director of Universal Press Syndicate, and I would not have been, you know, on this stage right now had it not been for him. And I was so looking forward to him seeing this exhibit because it was still in the stage of putting it together. It was just a thought at that time, but I was like, oh great, when Lee comes to New York, he can get to see it. But right after the syndicate said, okay, we're not going to do Where I'm Coming From anymore, they invited me to come up with an idea. Let's see, can you do a daily? And I did come up with something, and it was called Brothers. You know, if mm-hmm. I had my way, it would be this. You know, if I had my brothers, and I got, you know, the editors there, they were like, 50% of them were like, this is pretty good. This other 50% like, so it never made it further than that. Yeah. But how about that? You know, just to give me another chance. They gave me another chance to try to do something. So I feel empowered. I know, I feel like and I do know that I've heard that my dad had said, you know, somebody said, oh, your daughter's a very good cartoonist. And he's like, well, she had a good teacher, you know, which is so sweet. But just knowing that he thought I was a good cartoonist, just knowing that Lee thought I was a good cartoonist, just knowing that I had, you know, 14 years of being nationally syndicated, you know, confirms, I'm a good cartoonist. You know, it kind of empowers me a bit to get back on the board. And I've come up, you know, now I have a board again. You know, I'm like, now I can, because I want to get these things off my notebook and into, onto paper so I could exhibit. So I do think something's going to be in my future.
Oh, I hope so. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, and I should clarify before I go, you mentioned that the museum was thinking, or the gallery was thinking about maybe doing a limited or individual showings. If that's something anyone listening is interested in, should they call and just check with the museum if that's possible? Or
yes, they can absolutely call them or send them an email. You know, there's a way. You can go to their website. It's Medialia, M-E-D-A-L-I-A. I know I was going to mess it up. Medialia. It's a Latin word. Because mm-hmm. the woman who is one of the her parents are the owners. And she's a metal artist. And as a matter of fact, at the same time, they show on this still exhibit, they're showing her. She just got a Lifetime Achievement Award. World-renowned metal artist. And this is also in another portion of the gallery is a retrospective of her work. So this is really something special to see there. And, you know, I'm going to ask you, Michael, to look it up and be able to say spell it correctly, because I'm an awful speller. Okay. But it's medialiagallery.com.
I'm sure also if people Googled your name and your father's name, they would probably be able to find it.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And again, we've said it is in New York. And, of course, everyone has to be safe now, and there are restrictions in New York, and so everyone's on comfort level. But if you're interested in the exhibit, and it, certainly the emails and calls might encourage them to extend it, so a time when it is safe, and if you are able to safely get there, I would very much encourage anyone listening to. Again, my hope was to go in early April during my daughter's spring break. I couldn't stay with them in New York the whole week, but I was hoping to join them for a few days, and I was going to definitely try to check that exhibit out. If it extends, maybe I'll have the opportunity to do so later on. I really hope so.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. I'm really proud of it.
Great. It sounds like you guys did a great job on it.
Thank you.
So Current Me is back for a quick wrap-up. I'm very happy Ms. Brandon Croft is getting another opportunity with this exhibit at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and Museum. For more information, you could check out the museum's website, and they are also on Twitter. The handle is @cartoonlibrary. I wish Ms. Brandon Croft the best, and I hope this time everything goes smoothly. As for the podcast, remember that you can find me on Twitter @comicsinthega, and I recently started an Instagram account that you can find if you search for Comics in the Golden Age. Thanks for joining me again, and take care.